Everyone, it's May 1st, and this is the Spring 2015 Nutrition Counseling Roundtable Call. I've lost track, but it looks like we have about 20 people on the call right now. And I'll remind you again that if there's noise in your background, I'm not really hearing any from anyone, but if there's noise in your background and you're concerned about that, you can four-star your phone, which will mute you so you can hear us, but we don't hear you. In order to unmute, you just do four-star again. So, just a little background first. This is an informal gathering. It's not a structured seminar or webinar kind of thing. Many of you may have been on the calls before or heard some of the recordings. It's a pretty freewheeling conference call. We'll have just about an hour. And the overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting. So that means that any topics that have to do with that communication process between us and our clients and motivational interviewing or any other ways of looking at the nutrition counseling process would be fair game. It's fun when you can chime in with maybe how you're using some of the counseling tips that you've got on my emails, which ones have intrigued you or something interesting has happened, any observations you've made when you use some of the motivational interviewing skills. It's great if anybody has any training opportunities that they want to share with other people on the call. That's fair game as well. You can ask your colleagues for input and suggestions. And as we get started, I'll ask you as you chime in first to give your name and geographically where you are, and maybe if it's appropriate, just a word or two about the population that you work with so that we'll understand the context. So, who wants to chime in first?
Evangeline Samples.
Hello, Evangeline, from West Virginia. I remember you. What would you like to chime in with?
I work with,
you want to share?
With the college population. I teach nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any counseling successes to share with anyone?
Well, I really enjoy it, and I find that it helps if I take an interest in the students.
Mm-hmm.
One of my students has an unusual name, and it's Nikita, after my favorite Elton John song.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Another student was drawing a picture, and I was able to take an interest in her art.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that happens when we're counseling individual clients, too, doesn't it? We take an interest in them. They're more apt to engage in the counseling process. Uh-huh.
Right. And nobody has ever fallen asleep in my class. So I consider that to be a win.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'm curious whether there's anyone else on the call who also teaches nutrition at the college level. Anybody else? Nope. Okay. Well, let's hear from someone else. Who else would like to talk?
This is Jeanette Tulis from Chattanooga.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
And thank you. And I do have a question. I work in a dialysis population, so I see these folks a lot, which is a little different from acute care. We have an opportunity to develop relationships. We have an opportunity to talk about something the next time we see them. It doesn't have to be immediate, which I think is a positive thing. But for some patients, I'm wondering, because I see them often and I know them, there are times when I realize that they really are not ready to receive any information from me. They really aren't ready to make any changes. They really just don't want to hear what I have to say. How can I acknowledge that without being rude and yet let them know that when they are ready, you know, I'm definitely ready to talk to them?
Mm-hmm. Jeanette, that's a very good question, and I suspect you're not the only one on this call who has that kind of a question. I'm curious first, what things have you done already that occasionally at least work?
Well, I do say things like, I mean, I try to have a different script every time, so I'm always saying the same thing. But I'll say, I know that we've talked about this before. I truly believe you understand, you know, what needs to be done. And from what I can see, you just aren't ready to make those changes yet. So, I mean, I've said things like that. But because of the way things are set up here, you know, we have to interact with the patients. We have to at least offer them information and document that that information was offered. So, you know, totally ignoring them is not really an option.
Not an option, right?
No.
Yeah, I hear you. You already figured that out. And I'm also hearing in your voice, Jeanette, that you care about the patients. You want the best for them. And they are, of course, in a very...
Right. And they're in a situation where, you know, life is just not ideal. You know, it just is not ideal. It's a very difficult life. And I definitely understand that, even though I can't relate completely to it. And I know that they feel put upon on so many areas of their life, and sometimes they just don't want to hear about how they need to make changes in their diet. And I do understand that.
Absolutely.
But
yeah.
Still, I have a responsibility, you know, as their dietitian, to address
problems. Yeah, to do the best
problems.
You can. And Jeanette, let me tell you what you said that you often say was essentially sounds like an accurate, empathetic reflection of what is true, that they've heard a lot of stuff already, they know what they're to do, and they're not ready to make changes, right? I mean, that's an accurate, probably, reflection. And making an accurate reflection, particularly one that has a little empathy like that, can go a long way. I'm wondering, how much have you read my tips on rolling with resistance?
A little bit. I've sort of skimmed them. I know you've got some things out there.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if tip number 103 is the one that has most in it. And I think it's in the archives. If you look it up on my archives and you don't find it, feel free to email me and I'll send it to you.
Okay. I'm writing that down.
Sure. a lot of the more recent tips are in my email. I have a thought for you. As you were saying that lovely, accurate reflection, it occurred to me there is also a way to turn it into an affirmation a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I feel like it's almost I'm criticizing them, and I, you know, and that raises defenses, of course.
Jeanette, you're attuned to that kind of thing. You notice when something feels like you're being critical or feels like you're arguing, and you're feeling that's not right. This is very helpful. I tend to agree with you. By the way, for anybody who isn't aware of it, I just modeled doing an affirmation of Jeanette.
I felt that too. Thank you.
Good. Okay, great. So there are ways to affirm these clients. Now, whether that would totally make them, you know, be ready for change, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Given their life, it wouldn't be a bad idea, you know, affirming things like that they are well-informed, that they have a lot of information, that, you know, they've been paying attention, if they have. You know, things like that can be affirmed. And even ask, even adding a little more empathy in there, generally, more general empathy about this is a tiresome life coming in few times a week and sitting on these machines, you know, or
right.
or whatever wording would be appropriate for the client. Does anybody else have other ideas for Jeanette, particularly for these settings where you have ongoing clients who don't seem ready to make changes?
Sometimes maybe asking them, would you like to hear more about X, Y, and Z? I know we've spoken about this before, but asking, would you like to hear more about?
Asking permission, in other
asking, words. Yes, would you like to hear more about this?
How does that sound, Jeanette?
They can say yes or no.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, I mean, that's not criticizing them. That's just saying,
right.
you know, I have more information on this. If you need more, I'd certainly be willing to talk to you about it. If you, you know, feel like you're not ready for it at this time, then that is entirely your decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wondered, too, if it would be, since we work a lot with families, if I could say something like, you know, you may not be ready to talk about this. Would it be okay if I contacted, you know, your husband? Would it be okay if I, you know, contacted on this issue? Of course I can call their family. I have permission to do that. But, you know, on this issue, I don't want them to think I'm, you know, setting their family members against them.
Right, or going behind their back or...
Right, right.
Or telling on them.
But, you know, they may not want that information right now, but maybe they want to have an ally in their household.
Mm-hmm. Jeanette, that's a very interesting idea. And that presents it as offering a way to get them more support as opposed to telling on them or, you know,
right.
getting someone to nag them.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. I have another tiny little wording thought.
Okay.
I'd be curious to hear what your response to this, though. The classic MI way of wording something, if there was one little piece of information that you might be ready for today, what might it be? Or if there was one tiny change you were ready to make, what would it be? Or if there was a family member that you would like me to speak with to inform them more, who would that be?
Okay.
More.
It puts it back on them and it gives them some
yeah.
control.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound to you?
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
And it's a little less yes or no, black or white, you know, do you want to do this or not?
Right, 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 right. Because I sometimes feel like I'm making it too easy for them to say no.
Right.
And, you know, I really want them, I don't want to downplay the importance of, you know, taking control of their nutritional status and improving it if they can. I don't want them to think it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, and you don't want to be just saying, okay, goodbye, you know.
Right, right. And I
right.
sometimes tend to do that.
Yeah, and I hear that you're doing that partly out of not wanting to push them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I've encountered resistance for sure. I've encountered a lot of defensiveness, a lot of walls up, a lot of, you know, perceived offenses, and you know, I'm just trying to avoid those as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah, and you're obviously very sensitive to that and not wanting to push them and cause more resistance. Absolutely. Any other ideas for Jeanette? Okay, well, let's move on. Who else would like to chime in with, it's always fun when there's exciting positive stuff besides just problems. And again, if you have noise in your background, in your room, you can mute your phone, either right on your phone, or if you don't have that option, you can do four star, and then four star again would unmute you. Who else wants to chime in?
Let me say one more thing. I did implement one change you told me about in a previous call, and that was asking for permission a lot of times to you know, talk with patients about their lab values or whatever, just saying, is this a good time? Because I think we tend to assume, as folks that live in dialysis, look, they're, of course it's a good time, they're just sitting there, but that's not always the case.
Yeah.
So I think that I've employed that a lot, and I think that's made a big difference in just asking, is this a good time, and not just launching in.
Right, right. Did I catch you at a bad moment, or, yeah, that kind of
yeah.
thing.
Are you feeling okay? I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can ask that.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, who else wants to jump in? Got about 24 people, I think, on the call. There's bound to be somebody who has a concern or something fun to share.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, this is Claire. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Claire.
And I'd like to put this out to the group. I work with private pay one-on-one counseling with patients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different group of people because they are coming to me because they are interested in nutrition and wellness and, you know, making some life changes. And I've been, you know, toying with some different ways and avenues of working with people. And one of the things I've recently implemented was giving people almost a blank form, you know, just, you know, some generalized blocks and areas. But I have them take all of their own notes instead of where I, in the past, used more handouts and wrote more information for them. And I was wondering if people find that their clients or their patients are more engaged if they're doing more of the note-taking as opposed to being more passive.
Interesting question, Claire. Let's find out from you first. Since you've been implementing that, what kind of response do you get? How does it feel?
I actually have liked it a lot because I actually find interesting what pieces of information people are writing down, or I'm thinking to myself, if I was doing more of the diagramming and, you know, note-taking, I don't know if I would have written that down because I would have thought, oh, that's pretty common knowledge. Where they seem to write that down with a fury, like that sort of struck a chord with them.
Isn't that?
So it's actually been educational for me to find what people are really, you know, underlining, you know, or putting stars beside.
Right. So you didn't realize that would happen, but it allowed you more insight into what matters to them.
Yes. Yes, and if I see them sort of pondering, like a phrase that they've written down, I can then go back to them and ask, you know, you seem to be knowing that one over. You seem to be pondering that. Why don't we stay on that topic a little longer? You know, do you have any questions about that? So it does sort of take the conversations and the teaching and expand it in directions I may have not ever planned. But I think that's more rewarding and more valuable for them.
Absolutely. That I'm finding myself intrigued. Who wants to jump in and respond to Claire's idea?
Hi, this is Alice out of Nashville. And
uh-huh.
In terms of Claire's point, I've taken it a little bit differently, and I use a whiteboard. And I will put things on the whiteboard, and I encourage the clients to take a picture of the board when they're through with the session. And I also will take a picture after they leave for my notes from the session. So that's really seemed to be helpful on both sides of the table.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is the whiteboard is something that then is collaborative, sort of the two of you are working on it. Even
correct.
Though you're the one actually
and,
writing.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they take the picture so they have it in their phone to refer back
mm-hmm.
to.
Right. Huh.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. the tip that I have just finished writing, and it didn't go out in the email today, the first of the month, because my copy editor hasn't gotten it back to me yet. I got it to her too late, is on using technology, actually, in the service of counseling. And this is a little twist that's interesting.
Yeah, I look forward to reading that when you get it out.
Sure. Any other responses? You know, Claire, I'll have
this
to say that,
okay.
Sure.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I must say I've had clients do all the writing for a long time, primarily because I have terrible handwriting, and I am fully aware of it and admit to it. So, you know, if there's something that needs to be handwritten out, I always have a nice little pad of paper right there for the client where they can write things down. And some people do now these days put it in a pad or a phone. And it's intriguing to me, Claire, that you're noticing not only does that cause the client to be a little more active because they're taking the notes, it also allows you to notice what they're writing and what things they seem to be intrigued about. And that's awesome. It becomes much more collaborative process.
When you were talking about technology, an interesting comment a recent client of mine mentioned to me was, you know, she had been doing her food log in a, you know, on an app on her phone. And she was explaining how very proficient she had become in it and how she was doing it faithfully, you know, throughout the day, every day. And for some reason recently when I asked her to do her food log, she had started to do it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure exactly why she did that, and then she had typed it for me and, you know, had sent it to me. And she admitted to me that she felt a much deeper and different connection and ownness when she was doing the pen and paper than when she had been putting it in her app.
Huh.
And that struck me because she's somebody who really, really struggles. You know, she also, you know, receives other counseling for some issues and concerns she has. But I thought that was very insightful of her to notice the difference, and that she that she had come up with this all on her own and shared it with me.
That is impressive, and something that you could affirm. The perfect thing to affirm. Wow. You know yourself. You're a good observer. You can then choose what works best for you. Yeah. Oh, isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. That was a nugget I will definitely tuck away in my head that, you know, somebody who's very technologically savvy really felt the different connection when she went back to pen and paper.
Absolutely. Wow. You know, somebody could do a research study on that.
Yes. Yes, because then she was able to relate the emotion in her little side notes of what she was feeling during these times when she was having difficulties. And
right.
She didn't have that when she was punching things into her app.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? And that could then be something that you might here and there share with other clients.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, without, of course, breaking confidentiality about this client, and yet saying, you know, something I've run into sometimes is that people experience keeping their food log differently when it's handwritten or on a phone. And then just say, you might just notice that. Yeah. Oh. Any other responses to Claire's concept or anything about recording or?
Yeah, I think it automatically becomes more personal if you write it down yourself as opposed to, you know, enter a bunch of data into an app. And it's just what journaling is really all about. I mean, that's what you do when you journal. And an app makes it much more, you know, separates you really from that. And you just become a data entry person instead of the one actually, you know, creating this document and and handwriting it. I think when you handwrite something, I think I have read that when you handwrite something, even notes in a class, they've said that students who took handwritten notes in a class just got much more out of it even than when they typed it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, of course, there's good research that shows that when people handwrite a journal for, you know, for therapy, you know, the one that has emotions and things on it, it does tend to work better when they use their hand to do it. There is something about the connection, the neurological connection between our brain and our hands. Yeah. Very interesting. One of the reasons I love these calls, you never know what's going to come up. Anything else on that or anything else?
Yes.
Sure. Anybody else want to chime in with something?
What? Are you serious?
What was that? Or was that someone in the background? That may have been in the background. And remember, if you're muted and you'd like to unmute yourself, you do 4-star, and that would unmute you. I'd like to chime in.
Hello?
Oh, yes. I heard someone say hello. Yes? Would you like to ask a question or bring up a concern? No, I guess not. Got a quiet group this time.
I will say this on the technology end, Molly, that some dietitians I know are actually having their clients and patients, especially in the outpatient setting, well, I guess exclusively in the outpatient setting, you know, take pictures of all their meals and actually send it and actually show that to them, you know, the next day or whatever they meet. And it's another way, I guess, to keep a food diary. It's certainly quick, and you see portion sizes, which is really important when you're, you know, when you're talking about food diaries, because portion sizes are notoriously extremely subjective. So seeing a picture of someone's plate, it's a great teaching tool. I haven't employed it yet. My population is largely elderly.
Uh-huh.
I've thought about it. I don't know if I really want to see everybody's plates, but I think for some folks, you know, it really might be helpful. If I had someone who I was getting really funky, you know, recalls from, and I knew they knew how to use technology and it didn't make sense with what I saw in their labs, it definitely would be something I would consider doing. It's just, yeah, sure, take a picture of it and store it in your phone and show it to me next time we sit down and talk, and
uh-huh.
you know, and we can see if, you know, how you're doing with portion sizes. And I mean, I think it potentially could be a very useful tool.
So I am a graduate student. I'm graduating in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be taking the registered dietitian exam in a couple months, but I'm interested in counseling, so I decided to call. So I did a research assignment where we did food recall using pictures. And
awesome.
It was a really good idea, and I definitely understand where we're coming from about getting an idea of portion sizes, but I must say that it was a lot harder to judge portion sizes from those pictures than I would have guessed. So feedback that I would give is, make sure that your patient tells you the size of the plate that they're using, or maybe have a picture of, like, a reference object in there.
Right. I was going to suggest a reference object, like a dime or a quarter or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I just know that it was difficult for us to assess what people were eating, and that might be helpful for other people. So I'll go back to muting myself. Thank you.
Oh, that was very, very useful. I would love to hear from anyone else who has experience in using pictures like this. You need a reference for size, even if it's a ruler right next to the plate or something. Any other thoughts?
Yes, Molly, I wasn't able to unmute myself earlier, but I actually am, as my other job, I am a writer for American Fitness magazine, and Yes, I do. I do feel a lot differently. I'm able to connect in a deeper way with my thoughts and emotions
mm-hmm.
when I hold the pen or pencil in my hand and actually write on paper
mm-hmm.
as opposed to mm-hmm. when I just type things.
It's just different. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm also a graduate student, and that's the way that I do my papers. I take my notes on paper first, mm-hmm. and then I can organize things in a little bit different way.
Yeah, and then put it on in a digital. You know, I'm intrigued about this difference between getting providing a recall or providing information to your dietitian verbally or with food records written either in an app or by hand, and taking pictures or bringing the phone in. I'm wondering from a client's point of view what the differences would be. Anybody have any thoughts about that?
Hello?
Hello? I'm wondering if there are any... Yes, I hear you.
Oh,
say
hi.
Hello.
So my name is Melanie. I'm a pediatric dietitian. I work in an outpatient setting. I didn't know if I was joined or if I could be
yeah,
heard.
Sure. You're here.
So I think, you know, with handwriting, research has been shown that what it does is actually physically having to handwrite and creates different synapses in your brain and pathways. So it impresses that furthermore in just cognitively for yourself, as well as seeing your own handwriting, it personalizes it to you as well.
Uh-huh.
So with typing things out, it's a very repetitive motion, but when you actually handwrite, it actually creates new pathways in your brain, which is why it's so much more robust when you handwrite things.
In terms of the learning process.
In terms of the learning process.
Taking notes, you mean? Yeah.
Exactly. So learning or even handwriting journals or even handwriting food records.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I wanted to add that, and I work in the pediatric population, so I work with young children all the way to, at times, 18-year-olds, and I like to do a combination of verbal history taking. If it doesn't quite match the blood work or my records, mm-hmm. I will then ask them to do a food diary or food record.
Uh-huh.
And I always have them include their what they're feeling, what their emotions are.
Right.
And some people do say, you know, I would prefer to do an app. And I say, that's fine. I do encourage them to do two different medias where they write it down. And they also take photos as well in conjunction. I think that when I see that I'm not getting an accurate diet history, that quite makes sense. A lot of times it's due to fear where they feel that they can't fully support, report everything without being judged or they feel like, oh, you know, I don't want to tell my dietitian this, especially in the first session or so before we've really established a strong rapport. So I try to make submitting a food record as simple as possible and as less labor intensive and also what they feel most comfortable with. But I definitely agree with having something, an object for reference size.
And I'm also wondering, as you say, that some people are embarrassed, and certainly we're all obviously aware that when we take a verbal, old-fashioned recall, that people can deliberately lie, and they can also just forget things. Literally, they just don't remember everything very well. And sometimes they lie because they're embarrassed. So, and I'm wondering whether taking pictures would be even harder and possibly more embarrassing, or easier and less embarrassing. Does anybody have an opinion on that?
So this is Melanie again.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what I've seen is I think that some people, they will tell me, oh, I don't feel comfortable taking a picture. So I will ask my client, you know, what makes you feel most comfortable? You know, what method would you prefer? And I say, I think we have to work together as a team to kind of detect, you know, what's going on, because I think you're giving the best history you can. So I really want to help make some changes that, you know, in any kind of way. So I say it as, you know, we're working as a team. We're trying to gather some more clues. So I think
gather
that
clues.
By putting it
that's
out
to... That's a great phrase, gathering clues.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's a very neutral, non-judgmental metaphor to use.
I have just asked them, though, do you feel comfortable with this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something you would prefer? And
yeah.
Usually they answer them very honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you're offering it like that. You can say some of my clients find it best to write down everything they eat. Some people like to use apps. Some people like to take pictures of their food so that we can go over them together, which sounds best to you. Yeah.
Okay.
This is Claire again.
Sure.
Regarding your last question, I find that I have generally only asked people to do the photos when we have built up a bit of a rapport.
Mm-hmm.
So they understand that I am not going to judge them, and that they feel comfortable enough to say, you know, I'm just not comfortable with this, or, you know, voice any concerns they may have.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I have found effective is for the photos, I have asked them that to feel free to send me a photo of a meal that you are struggling with and that you have a concern with. And in that communication, you know, they have to tell me why they're sending this to me.
Mm-hmm.
So that they already start
right.
to think it through, assess it themselves, and put in their comments.
Oh, so you're essentially inviting them to really engage with it and with you.
Yes.
As opposed to just snapping a picture and sending it.
Absolutely.
Right. To take a picture, send it with a note saying, notice that how much potatoes that is. That's really scary for me. I don't think I should be eating any starch. And look at all that. Or if that's what their thoughts are, I'm thinking
absolutely
with an eating disorder, right? So you hear some of the thoughts that are associated to the picture with them for them. Oh, that
yes.
sounds useful.
So that we can either agree or we can explore their concern. Or I can sort of calm them down.
You can reality
check. You know, that they, yes,
right.
give them a little bit of a reality check, you know, and
yeah.
you know, I encourage them, you know, we can always mitigate damages.
Right.
Nothing, you know, this is not yeah. the worst meal on the entire planet right in front of you.
Right. right. Yeah, because our clients judge themselves even before we do, don't they?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So it's
yeah.
so they don't go into it with a fear of judgment. They go into it with a... we're having a conversation about this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they don't feel like they have to take a photograph of everything in the world they're eating.
Right. Right. Yeah. Unless that's what you're doing briefly with someone, having them take everything so you can see it all. But that's a
correct
whole process. Yeah. Okay. Huh. Interesting. Any other thoughts or comments about taking pictures or sending pictures or technology or... So what about any other topics or questions?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Who is this?
This is Becky Moffitt. I'm a dietitian in Arizona. I do outpatient
Hello,
counseling.
Becky.
Mm-hmm. Hi. We live in a rural area, and we're beginning, well, we're not even starting. We're just talking about doing some telehealth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if anyone had any experience doing counseling that way. I haven't.
Oh, Well, first I will point you to a tip I wrote on counseling on the phone, which is tip number 89, which I believe would be 89. I think that's in, it may be in volume 3. If not, it's on the archives. If you don't find it on the archives, email me and I will email you back a copy. Who wants to share any ideas with Becky about the ins and outs of doing it on the phone? Nobody has any great ideas?
Is this just wellness counseling?
Yeah, it would probably, maybe diabetes, maybe any kind of home health patient that couldn't come in or that lives far away.
Okay, so it might be MNT.
Oh, definitely.
Not just sort of wellness. Right, okay. And will you have video or will it just be phone?
Probably both. Probably some people will just have telephone and others will have video. We're not totally set up yet. We're hoping to get the grant in July so that we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I certainly
I just have no experience with that. I prefer to see people in person so you can read their body.
Yeah. And that's why video would be a great idea, using a platform. Well, your hospital may have a platform it's using, one of the ones that medical professionals use a fair amount that's free is VC, the letter V and then SEE, and I believe it's considered to be HIPAA compliant. It was designed for medical contacts. And it's like Skype, you know, but it's very easy, idiot-proof in my opinion, and I'm an idiot technology-wise sometimes. So it's very easy to use with, you know, iPads and computers and phones and all sorts of things. And indeed, the body language helps, or even the facial expressions, even if you don't see the whole body, can be very helpful. I'll mention.
I think they're talking about putting cameras, you know, giving them to the patients or even computers if they don't have them.
If they don't have them, uh-huh. Right.
So I think we'll have video for almost everyone. And I thought, boy, it would be great. They could give me a picture of their pantry or something.
Right. Well, I have heard about people who have used those, and particularly if it's a pad or an iPhone, or, you know, a phone, they can walk it into the kitchen. A laptop's a little harder. Computer's a little harder. But certainly, yeah. And that can be very helpful. I'll tell you one of the things, several things that people who work a lot on the phone particularly find is the issue of distractions, for one thing. Distractions in the person's home. There sometimes has to be a little bit more request made by the professional to, you know, minimize the distractions. And also the... trying to figure out if the client is engaged and is present, particularly if you don't see them. And who makes the phone call? You know, who initiates
whom?
It? Yeah, exactly. Especially if it's just a phone. You know, do you call them or do they call you? And I urge people generally to set up the appointment time and then have the client call you if that's possible, because that's more like them coming into an office.
Okay.
And it would then be impossible for them to say, right, I was supposed to talk to you today, wasn't I? You know, and be sort of caught off guard if you're calling them. That's more apt to happen. You can see how the other people in your program will be doing it as well.
I have a question about counseling on the phone. This is Barbara. I'm from Michigan, and I work with a group of psychologists. I'm private pay outpatient, and I deal mostly with eating disorders, and I work in an office with psychologists. And one of the psychologists asked me if we can get paid for doing a counseling session over the phone. I didn't think there was any ethical problem with it. She asked me if there was, because I guess counselors cannot. But I wasn't aware of any.
Well, I'm probably not the completely best person to ask. One thing I do know is that many, not all, but many insurance companies will not reimburse. Now, you said you're usually private pay?
I'm private pay, and some of the counselors are also private pay. A few of them take insurance.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if there is not insurance involved, it just has to do with your license. And does anybody know whether the Academy has anything in the Code of Ethics? I don't think so. There may be something in your state in terms of license that you have to, it has to be someone who's in the same state as you. I know some states have that provision.
Mm-hmm.
You have to
be Michigan actually doesn't even have licensure.
Oh, okay. Though if you're counseling people in the same state, it's a moot issue.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Any other thoughts for Barbara on the legalities of that? And of course,
I was wondering about liability issues. If you're counseling over the phone, you just don't have the same information as you would have if you actually, you know, were in an office seeing somebody, having records in front of you. I'm just wondering if there would be any additional liability issues for information or counseling you would give someone and then they would use it wrongly or whatever.
You talk to your liability insurance carrier and see if they have any input on that.
Mm-hmm.
That might be useful.
Yes, I have heard about that. Mm-hmm. With counseling people in different states. And I was told that I would have to have a license for each state.
Right, if you want to work across state lines.
Right.
You have to have a license in
because
the state
I was
where
approached,
the person lives.
Yes, I was approached several years ago to do tube feedings online.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah.
to do recommendations for tube feedings online.
Mm-hmm. Well, this gets a little outside my area of expertise. I'm afraid I don't know much about these legalities.
I have a comment if you guys can hear me.
Sure. Yes, we can.
Okay. Hi, this is Lisa from New Hampshire.
Hi.
And there's a great article. I'm looking at it online in Today's Dietitian, if you're familiar with that publication,
uh-huh.
which I think a lot of that you can get online too, in the April 2014 issue. There is an article on virtual nutrition counseling by Lori Zanison, and she talks about, I'm just kind of skimming it over, going to the home and then like telehealth over the phone. And it looks like, you know, there's even a topic on money matters and legal issues. It says many insurance plans don't cover virtual services. There's legal issues because it's a relatively new field, and there's a lot of HIPAA issues. And it looks like every state has actually some rules and regs that have to be followed for a dietitian to communicate with.
That sounds like a great article.
It looks like a really good article.
A year ago. Yeah.
April of 2014, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Sort of backing up a little bit to where we initially got into this, any other input or thoughts about the actual process of interacting with someone on the phone? Think if I have anything else to add. Oh, well, one of the, of course, is that there are certain clients with which it just would not make sense. I mean, someone where with an eating disorder where you really need to be weighing them every week or something, and you don't trust them to weigh themselves, obviously it's not going to work if there isn't a trust issue. Many people I've talked to who routinely work on the phone, and that's often health coaches, where it's a little bit more wellness counseling, find that using summaries, interim summaries throughout the session can be very helpful, a little bit more than you might even do in a in-person session. And I've written several tips on using summaries. Last one was tip 119, I think. And little summaries periodically can sort of help keep the session on track. We're going to run out of time in a few minutes. Is there one more concern or question?
Yes, I was taught to, when I speak on the phone, to smile because people can hear a more pleasant tone in your voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a great idea. Uh-huh. Oh, I wonder if that actually would apply also to us. Let's see. I'm trying to figure out how to put this. Making sure your face has the expression you would like to have on it while you and that may be often a smile. There may be appropriate times for it to be a concerned expression on your face or something else. And if you have that on your face, it may come through the voice. Huh. Yeah.
I also like to make people laugh a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, humor can work well.
When my class talked about exercise, one of the tips in our book suggested to walk the neighbor's dog. But
uh-huh.
He was 3 feet at the shoulder. And I said, I think that dog's big enough to walk himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a dog I couldn't possibly control.
Right. 3 feet. Gosh.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Well, if there's nothing else, we'll wind up, and I'll put up the recording for anyone to listen to in the future, and I'll put up a date. I'll pick a date maybe about 3 or so months from now. If anybody has any requests for me doing it at a different time, I tend to just choose a time that's convenient for me. If anybody wants to make a request, I'd be willing to hear it. And if it's a time that works to me, I might jumble up the times a little bit. Okay, well, do stay in touch, and I was serious in saying please do feel free to email me for copies of any of those tips that I mentioned that are not in the archives. Okay.
I want to thank
Take
you.
Care.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Take care. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, thanks.